Rock and roll. Welcome to the Capital Razor Show season 3 with my guest and new friend, Bronson Hill. My friend, how are you doing today, my brother?
Hey, what's up, Ruben? So good to be here, man. It's great to be about raising money, and just we get to do one of the most funnest things in the world, which is be able to talk to people and tell them about amazing investments. I pinch myself sometimes. We get paid to do this.
I was hanging out with Coach Trevor McGregor, and he was talking about genius zones. Like, what's your strength? And I'm just like, dude, I love networking and meeting people and being high energy and laughing and podcasting. The recording part is so fun. Like, the editing, not quite so much, but
yeah. Well, you're talking about the network. I got to meet you at an event in Phoenix. Yeah. And it was just so great. I could tell you were right in your element, man. You were talking to everybody and making all kinds of great connections and telling some good jokes. I think you told a couple jokes that were fun. It was great.
I got to meet a few people for the first time, get some selfies, people that I'd known for a couple of years. Greg Butcher comes to mind. Bunch of people. Matt, it was really great meeting you, dude. It was a great event.
Man. Yeah, it's great meeting you too. I feel like I've known you for a while, but the person we actually like had a conversation, like, oh, now I know Ruben. That's awesome. So.
How fun, man. All right, dude. Well, let's break it down a little bit for the audience who doesn't know you, which probably a lot of them are familiar with you, but there's probably some people that haven't heard of Bronson Hill. So tell us about your background, man. How'd you get into this thing called real estate syndication?
Yeah, so I was a well-paid executive in sales, medical device sales. I'd go into surgery and help cardiologists to work with their heart surgeries. And it was a good job. I was making over 200K a year, but I wanted to have something that was my own, something that I could do where I wasn't tied to a location. I love traveling. I've been to 40 countries now. Nice. And I just have so many ideas, from business ideas and different things, that I wanted to be able to do my own thing, really. And I'd been investing in single family for years, just a small single family portfolio. And I had this grand plan to get 30 houses in actually the Cleveland area. So really low cost housing, and to scale that up and to retire with passive income. And I have a relative who I hadn't seen in years and said, well, why don't you do multifamily? And he was a big multifamily guy. And I said, well, I'd love to, but I don't have the money. And he said, well, you can raise the money. And so I was like, you can raise the money, really? And I'm thinking, that sounds kind of scary. And well, is that really, you know, how does that work? And so I learned about syndication. And from that point, we had that conversation. About 2 years later, I had raised $15 million. I was on my way to quitting my job. Now I've raised about $27 million. And it's been amazing. It's not always been a bed of roses, but it's been a lot of fun. And it's just amazing that this is out there. We get to help people on their way to become financially free and partner with them, which is really wonderful.
Yeah. Shout out to Richard C. Wilson, who's a new sponsor of the show, which is now powered by PitchDex, one of his companies, sponsored by the Family Office Club. More on that as the show unfolds, man. But so your story sounds kind of similar to mine. I started in small multis as a capital raiser, and then eventually I split up with my partner, didn't know how to do it by myself because I was kind of like the marketing behind the acquisition of these small fourplexes and whatnot in Phoenix. And at some point, I tried to meander my way back into real estate, and all I knew was fourplexes. And I had this elaborate plan to get 128 units consisting of 32 fourplexes by doubling my portfolio every couple of years. And someone's just like, 128 units. Like, why don't you just take them all down right now? And I was like, well, I don't know how to do that. What are you talking about? Like, that's not possible. And then they introduced me to this thing called syndication. That's kind of like my similar story. But I'm curious about this. You mentioned that you had raised $27 million. I'm curious, is that a team effort or is that all you?
So a little bit of my journey. When I first started, I basically did everything I could to learn about multifamily. And so I started a local meetup in Pasadena, California, where I live. We had 60 people there. I partnered with another person who'd been running a meetup. And I said, hey, let's do another meetup that's not just general real estate, but it's about multifamily only. And so I said, I'll do all the work and you just show up. And she said, well, that sounds like a great idea. So I just did all the work, showed up. And at that first event, I met a guy who said, hey, I'd invest in one of your deals. And so I got coffee with him and he became my first investor. So I had 100K raised, became a general partner in a deal that was 225 units. So that was, you know, it was a team effort. I didn't really even know who to partner with. So at that first real estate meetup meeting, I met another guy who was a syndicator and he was raising money for his deal. So that's kind of how I partnered with him. So all of my deals are partner deals. I have different partners I work with. I basically, after about 6 months of just continuing to try to find deals, doing everything I could, this hack can happen a lot before you actually get a deal going, before a deal actually closes. It can be just a lot of work to get things actually really moving. But I approached a very successful syndicator who had just basically a business that would teach people how to syndicate. And I just knew because of his podcast and because of his online presence, like there's a lot of people that he's reaching that are maybe doctors or lawyers or something. And they're not going to want to buy apartments themselves and run them. So I basically approached him and I said, hey, what if I worked with you and we did this together? And up to that point, they were having trouble raising $600,000 to do a deal. And so it basically kind of formed a partnership, and I started taking calls kind of based on his platform and our funnel to kind of get people in. And I was doing 15 to 20 calls a week or more while doing my full-time job. And I was able to have about 1,000 one-on-one phone calls over the next 18 months. And then we raised those $15 million. So it was definitely a partner thing, but that's the thing about, and if you look at what all my partners have raised on deals, I mean, the last deal I raised $3 million for personally, and my partners raised $17 million. So we have, these are all team efforts, but when I say $27 million, that's all money that I've personally raised, brought into multifamily deals.
That's amazing. I'm at the point now where I used to declare what I had personally raised. And now I'm kind of at the point where I'm heading up the marketing side of legacy acquisitions, our fund management, syndication, and BTR business. And like what I'm doing for the back end, the marketing, the national exposure, like whatever we raise as a team, I'm starting to get to the point where it's not just about what I do, but it's about what the entire team does. I think some people get caught up in the whole concept. I know I did, of like, well, how much have I personally raised? And like, did I do this by myself, or did I switch to the mindset of this is a team collaborative effort? So I kind of wanted to explore that, this particular concept. I don't think I've ever said anything like this on my show ever in like 200 plus episodes. So I was just kind of curious your take on that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. And a lot of times people think of, if you've raised, you know, once you get your first deal done, that's kind of the first big landmark that you've done a multifamily deal, whether it's a duplex or it's a 200 unit. I think ours was 225. But once you get one done, then it's, things do tend to come a little bit quicker. But it can be challenging to raise money. It can be challenging in the beginning. It can be challenging now. It's been, at least when we're recording this, there's been some softening of the market just in general, just people kind of generally afraid of inflation or interest rates, which I think is, man, it's time to double down. If there's any time to double down, it's right now. But people that aren't as sophisticated can be like that a little bit during these times. But I think, like you said, you know, how much does the team do? How much are we doing as a team? It's a cool concept. And sometimes I will meet people that are like, oh, you know, we've raised $500 million. We raised $200 million. We've raised a certain amount of money. But it's just hard to know what people do in a project. And it's hard to like, the challenge is it's hard to like identify yourself, because you're not trying to boast. When I say I've raised $27 million, I'm not trying to boast on it, but I'm also trying to give some credibility of like, and I've had 1,300 phone calls with investors. We've had a lot of things that we've fallen on our faces and they haven't worked. There's been a lot of failure in that. And there's been a lot of great successes, but you know, I'm not Buck Joffrey who's raised $600 million. I'm not Dave Zook who's raised $500 million. And those are like, that's how much they've personally raised with their team. So I think there's just, we're kind of at different levels, and wherever we are is fine.
Yes.
But I think it's just like, it's a challenging way to identify both where we're at. And this is, of course, the money raising, capital raiser show. So it's trying to, how do we kind of see where we're at? If we're kind of just getting started 0 to 1, or maybe we've got one or two deals, or we've raised between 10 and 30 million, or maybe you're in the, you know, 10X that or more, it's everything's kind of a different ballpark. So I think it's helpful, but you're right. It's how do you really identify what you did when it is a team effort and you're doing more than just raising capital?
Yeah. We have some people on our team that they're not even capital raisers, but they're absolutely imperative to the capital raising process. Guys that like handle the automations, guys that handle the investor relations, somebody that walks you through how do you place your money in the Syndication Pro portal and get it across the finish line and get them to help them verify the accreditation status. All these things are part of the capital raising process. And like, we need help in order to scale to the point where we're raising $20 million a year. We can't just do it like one guy making phone calls. So it's just a concept of leverage. You know, there's this book, I haven't read it yet, but it keeps on popping up over and over on the show. It's Who, Not How, right? So like,
how do you delegate?
Yeah. How do you find other people to do the things that you're not good at and understand the fact that you have a certain genius zone and you should contemplate, you know, like Tim Ferriss likes to talk about the way that he won like a martial arts MMA fight and how he became like a world-class tango dancer that won awards is never by addressing his flaws, but by capitalizing on his greatest strengths. This is an interesting topic that people should be aware of. Because a lot of people, especially at the beginning, they don't have the money to outsource. So like, what's that right balance of outsourcing and doing it everything yourself? When I started the show, I had to do all of the editing, all the production, all of the, I had to pay for it all in my pocket. I had to go get the guests, book them. Dude, it's just like, you can't scale the show if you're doing all those things. So eventually over time, I learned to outsource. And it's very similar in the other complexities of the capital raising business.
Yeah. And it brings up a really good point, because I think a lot of times when we approach multifamilies for people that are newer, when I started, I did this, I brought the single family mindset, which you can kind of do a lot, depending on how big your portfolio is. If you've got four or five houses or a couple of houses around, you can do everything. You can do it all and it's not too much, whatever. But when you get to like 10, 20, 30 houses, you can't. And that's the thing with multifamily, is as you're scaling your business. And I think there are people do capital raising different ways. Some people just have great connections. A lot of us, like you and I and other content creators, we just try to create really good content. And people say content is king. And I would say, well, say maybe, but I'd say really distribution is king, getting to in front of the right people and getting the right guests and content and the right distribution channels. I think that's probably more important. But I think we don't realize we can hire people. I mean, I have a team that does my podcast stuff. Anytime I record one and I send it over to the Mailbox Money Show, they do all that. They take it and they put it out there. My virtual assistant does a lot of our events and all of our social media processes. And people are like, how do you do all this? And I'm like, I want to say like, well, I don't, you know, like, I don't really do it. I've got team members. But that's something, again, when you start thinking beyond just, hey, this is me and my business, it's really, it's our business. It's a team.
Good stuff so far. So we're going to explore some of the things that you're doing to get in front of more people and some of your approaches. But let's hear about your business model first. What kind of assets are you buying in what cities?
We have about $200 million in multifamily assets. We're primarily in Jacksonville, Florida. That's where we're doing a ton of stuff, buying value add, C plus class properties, you know, early 70s vintage. We do have about 500 units in Atlanta as well. And then we've got some in Huntsville, Alabama. So we've got mostly the Southeast. I love Jacksonville because, at least at the time of this recording, we're seeing current rents of $922 a month for properties we're buying. And the going rate for post-renovation units, about a $6,000 just light rehab, is $1,460. So it's about a 50-60% upside. So we love that, right? We love being able to see, and then we feel like that gives a lot of margin of safety for, which Warren Buffett talks about. You have a margin of safety in case things go down, or unless you have some sort of backup plan or things don't go as well. So the risk really right now, if valuations or interest rates, valuations go down, interest rates go up, or kind of a mix of those, if you're buying Class A stuff all the time, you don't really get that margin of safety, which is the value add, right? The biggest risk is if we can just complete the business plan, we know we're going to do just fine. So we do take a value add approach in working class neighborhoods in Jacksonville.
Awesome. Good stuff. Okay. So tell me about your day-to-day operations. What do you do on a regular basis? You mentioned right before we got started, it's been a busy day. What have you been up to just today?
Yeah. So it's funny. I have some people that think I just like sit at home and make YouTube videos and phone calls, all this. Like, yeah, I don't know. There's so many things that come up. I've got an investor who invested. We're doing an ATM machine fund now, which invests with the fifth largest operator of ATMs. This person's wanted, or this kind of group has wanted, to make a substantial multi-million dollar investment into it. So we're going to have a meeting. So I had to kind of coordinate with them. Just stuff comes up on current deals. We've got to deal working with people on some of that stuff you were saying. I still try to work with investors when it comes to getting them in the portal and getting their accredited investor letters and doing some of that stuff. So a lot of it's just following up with people, recording some videos this week. Got to outline that. I had a great marketing meeting with a consultant today. Just like, what is it in my funnel that I'm doing? And if you're not familiar with the term funnel, it's just, you know, when you go out and sell, we've got our lead magnet. So like a couple different eBooks, we've got our webinars, and that draws people into our network. And then is there some sort of small low cost thing that can get them further along the way? So just talking about just each step before somebody invests, or maybe somebody wants to be active, kind of how that goes. So there's a couple of things I worked on today, and then just continuing to, I'm just looking over at my list here of things that every day I do a little list. And so today it's like, I've got the list, I cross things off the list as they're getting done, and rare that I cross things, all the things off my list, right. But I'm definitely a list guy. But every week there's different challenges that come up, and a mix of investor phone calls, creating content, going to properties, or following up, doing asset management calls on properties, and then just continuing to innovate. And that all takes a lot of time and energy. Sure you well know.
All kinds of things. I mean, just bringing in a new partner into your business, you got to create JV agreements and then decide if you're going to do a fund or if you're going to do a syndication. And like, What are you going to do in addition to raising capital? Because you can't just do that. There's other things that you have to, like, when are we going to walk the properties? When are we going to do this, that, the other? It's just a never-ending list of things. And I'll be surprised if I ever get to the point where I can cross everything off of my list, because it's just, it's like multiple days worth of stuff that you're trying to accomplish every single day, including personal things.
Yeah, no, it is. The list, I've realized too, like one day I will die and there will still be things on the list, and it's okay. Like, it's like, you know, you just kind of do the best you can. But I wonder if it's like God's sense of humor is like, your list, you always have more things on the list, but it's okay.
That's phenomenal. So you mentioned the Mailbox Money Show. What other things? I know you're a stage presenter, keynote speaker. You mentioned the meetup, which I think is a great platform for getting in front of more people. Anything else that you're doing to expose yourself? I think the webinars that you mentioned has been really effective tool for me, and something I learned from Dan Hanford. Just do a bunch of webinars and that grows your list. What can you tell me about getting in front of more people?
Yeah, I think it's something I continually, you know, try to do more of. The webinars that I do, the educational webinars, they've been really powerful. They're a lot of work, but once a month we either do a multifamily panel where we bring three multifamily people together. I just got one planned for October. It's the first Wednesday in October. I've got Ken McElroy, Michael Blanc, and Buck Joffrey coming together talking about, you know, great should names. You buy, hold, or sell your real estate? And then on August 3rd, which may come, this may come out after that point, I imagine, but I've got a guy named Harry Dent, who's a big economist, being with Jason Hartman, and somebody named Lynette Zhang, who's a big metals person. And it's just, you get really quality people in the room and they talk and they have differing opinions and what you should do and how it looks. And it's, you can't help but learn something. And I think that's what I've realized. So when I do these events, and hopefully the people that I invite to be on the panels, they're also inviting their audience. Because all they have to do is show up. Here, I'm doing this whole event. All they have to do is show up. So I'll get sometimes 300, 400, 500 people to sign up. And then all those people are added on my list. And it gives me an opportunity to maybe invite them to join our deals or to download some of our resources and just continue to create value. The more I can create value, the better it is, right?
Yeah. We're having a lot of success with our webinars too. I did a survey because we don't sell anything on the webinars really other than how to become a better syndicator. And raising capital and that type of stuff. We're doing this one actually probably right around the time that this show will come out. We'll have just done a episode with Coach Trevor McGregor and Tyler Chesser that's going to be about unlocking the syndicator subconscious.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a lot of fun because there's a lot of people that talk about mindset and subconscious, but they're not typically multifamily guys. So for us to combine those two things, I think it's going to be a fun play.
Tyler Chesser is amazing. Stephen Pesavento, the Investor Mindset podcast. He's a great guy too.
I haven't met him yet.
Good guy.
But we did a survey of the people that kind of were on attending the webinar, and we were like, would cause you to come back and continue to participate in these webinars, because they get like a Q&A session at the end of it. And they're like, well, as long as you get these big names, I guarantee you I'll be back. And I thought about them. So it's not necessarily, let me explain to you a specific nuance of syndication, but let me get a big name person on there. I think this is one thing that I've recommended to people starting podcasts. Like, get some big names on there. They're almost always going to say yes. You don't have to dabble with small people. Has this been your experience? Like, because you mentioned Michael Blanc and some other names.
Yeah. So I actually just joined. There's a mastermind called Kingdom REI.
Yeah.
And it's a faith-based group where we train people how to do multifamily. So I'm a coach. I'm a money raising coach there. So now I help people to kind of talk about this. But one of the things that I have found, it's the power of your associations with others. So when I'm leading a panel, I led a panel earlier this year, and I was leading the panel in January. It was the Multifamily Outlook 2022. It's still on YouTube. People can find it. But it was Michael Blanc, Ken McElroy, and Rod Khalif. And so here, I'm the guy leading the panel, and these guys are just giants in multifamily. And I'm getting more well-known, things like that, but I'm not where any of these guys are. And I realize that. But I realize when you invite people, and particularly on a panel, you can get sometimes some big names. And not, I mean, most of the people that I've invited don't respond or say no or whatever, and that's fine. But I think that when you're associated with people, and if they're on your podcast, and you think about that, well, why would Ken McElroy or why would some of these big people come on your podcast? And you have to really think, if you have a podcast that's got 10 listeners, well, that's probably not going to add a lot of value to them. But if you're like, hey, I have a list of 3,000 people and we're going to advertise it and we're going to try to get 500 people there, whatever, well, that would be attractive. Like, I would come to that. I'm sure we would all come to that because someone's doing the work to try to get that in front of their list and their people. So again, I think for anybody that's raising capital, the goal is really adding value. And there's a, I can't remember if it's Jim Rohn or somebody said this, some personal development person said, people will buy from you or they will work with you to the, with a direct correlation of how much value they've gotten from you. So it's the idea of how much personal transformation they've experienced by learning from you or being with you. So the idea of if you can associate yourself with powerful people and you're the one who creates the room, right? I create these rooms. You create these rooms. You create these awesome webinars where great people come in and people get value out of that. And it is. So that's why I just keep shooting higher and higher. I keep trying to get bigger and better people. And a lot of people just don't want to do that work. But I think it is really, really powerful because then you get associated with them. Yeah. I just want to tell a quick story here. I was with the real estate guys, Robert Helms and Russell Gray. They're pretty big time folks. And they were at Freedom Fest and they were able to get Steve Forbes, who is a billionaire and he was a presidential candidate, to just literally come on their podcast, like right there. They just had everything ready and he went over and he talked. And while I was there, I got to meet Jim Rogers. Jim Rogers is, I believe he's also a billionaire, but he was partnered with that years ago, George Soros and the Quantum Fund. And so he's written a lot of books, just really amazing. So you just never know who you're going to meet. And when that opportunity comes, how do you create value for these people? Because everybody wants their time, but how do you create something for them? But if you're seen with them, if you can do something and you're involved with them, your credibility goes way up. If I saw you with Robert Kiyosaki and you're at an event and you're interviewing him, whatever, well, that's like, who's this? You know, people want to know who you are. So that's the power of association is incredibly amazing. And we don't realize we do it with people, but people also do it with us when they're looking at us.
Yeah. Quick note on that. Like when I go to a conference like Best Ever or Vertical Street, I'm getting selfies like with like the stage presenters and like the Hunter Thompsons of the world. And I'm putting that stuff on social media so people can see what circles I'm running with. So I highly recommend for the guys that are going to conferences, take some selfies with these big name peoples and then put that out on LinkedIn or wherever else that you're posting. So good stuff. Yeah. I'm curious about this because we got to chat a little bit about capital raising. I'm curious about the early days of capital raising, how you learned capital raising. What have you learned along the way and how are things different now?
Yeah, this is always the big question a lot of people ask is like, well, how do I get going? And I almost for everybody I've talked to, I mean, almost without exception, there's like 6 to 18 months of just the most intense grinding. It's like you're just roaming around in the dark trying to grasp something you can't see, or it feels like you're pushing that boulder up the hill. And again, you've never done it. And so it's hard. So it's hard to get people to take you seriously because they know you as, oh, you're the medical sales guy, or you're the doctor, or you're what you like. They don't know you as, hey, I'm a real estate investor. And so one of the biggest things that I tell people when they're first starting out is to get on ActiveCampaign. You can get on other ones, MailChimp, some of these other ones. ActiveCampaign is great because you can scale it literally to the moon. And once you learn those systems, there are people that have millions of people on there and they work great. So it's like $10 a month. And it's basically like an email thing that will constantly, you can just create emails and it just can send out automatically every week, just new things you're doing, events you're going to, what you like about multifamily, and just get your, everybody you can think of, your friends, family, people you went to high school with, get 100, 200 people on the list if you can. And then just start emailing people. Hey, I'm open to have a call if you want to chat. And what happens is you're telling your story in a different way. And that's what the social media stuff does too. When you post, Ruben, hey, I'm over here. I'm at this event and I was with Hunter Thompson or I'm with Robert Kiyosaki or I'm with whoever, like it tells a different story. And so that's what's really powerful. So I think the biggest thing when people first start out is just really trying to get people to associate you in a different way. When I go to my car mechanic, I expect him to fix my car. Now, if he were to say, hey, Bronson, let me tell you about this real estate deal, I'd be like, well, this just doesn't make sense. I don't know him as that. So if he were going to do it, he would have to try to really take some time and get to retell that story. Hey, this is who I'm becoming. This is, I was this, and now I'm doing this. And so I think that's just a lot of times people, they don't realize that there's a gap people have. And if people don't understand how that makes sense, even though they like you and they know you, their family, they may just not know that that's something you're involved in. And they may not trust you in that because they haven't seen the credibility and just the duration of you doing that.
Okay. So who did you learn from originally? About like syndication law, about legalities around raising capital, about how to brand yourself. You're talking about rebranding yourself as a multifamily investor instead of a physician or lawyer or whatever other kind of profession that you have.
Yeah, so who I learned from initially, my cousin actually was the one who was the relative that said, hey, here you want to raise the money. And he recommended the real estate guys. They're a great crew. I mean, they do an event on syndication twice a year. It's a 2-day event. There's one coming up in the fall and one in March. And it's great. It just teaches you about the legalities of syndication, teach you, you know, you meet a lot of great people that are syndicating, you hear stories of people that actually left their job and how they did it. And I think when you meet people that are doing it, and that's why I meet people sometimes and they only do local meetups, so they don't want to travel. But I mean, as you know, national conferences, you meet people that are very serious. You meet people that are really, this is what they do. They've been doing it for years, or they're transitioning and they're really, really going for it. Michael Blanc was really instrumental in that. We ended up working together on deals as equity partners for a couple of years, which is great. But I learned just basically from seeing what he did and some of his material as well. I'm getting ready to kind of prepare some of my own stuff in the future of actually training people how to syndicate. And of course, we have the coaching that we're going to be doing it, or we're doing at Kingdom REI. But I think the biggest thing is getting around people that have done it and just asking them questions, or reading books, or just trying to, all the information is out there. And it's information, but I think it's more transformation. It's more seeing the person, talking to them. What do you think I should do? I mean, this is my situation in life. Like, I've got so many opinions. If somebody does whatever for work, I'm sure you do as well. Here's a way you could reach the people that you work with, or here's a way you could kind of do something on the side without it jeopardizing your day job, because that's a big risk, right? If I'm a sales guy and I start posting things on LinkedIn and I'm doing all these deals, my sales company says, well, what the heck are you doing? You're supposed to be outselling, and right, perception's reality. So that's also a concern a lot of people have of how do I build this while I'm not jeopardizing my job. So
good stuff. All right. So you've mentioned Kingdom REI a couple of times. My partner, Andy McMullen, is a part of that. I know a bunch of people that we actually even invest with, like Abel Pacheco, Todd Dexheimer comes to mind, Dan Hanford, my construction partners, Derek Alexandrenko is part of Kingdom REI. Tell us, peel back the curtain a little bit. Good friends with Ellis Hammond, got a mastermind with him at Best Ever Conference. Awesome. Miss you, dude, if you're listening in, dude, got to hang out soon. But tell me what goes on in there. I mean, we understand the philosophy. It's a faith-based company, but you said you were going to be a coach. What kind of stuff happens?
Yeah, so really the goal of Kingdom REI is it's just the thought that we're one connection away. It's one connection. It was that one connection I made with somebody at a, it was a high-paid event I went to that I really made a connection. It's just really trying to help people to get their first deal done, to get their second deal, to get on the way to do bigger deals. People are stuck. It's proven not only in real estate, but in if you're an athlete, having a coach, you can get there faster. Professional athletes all have coaches. A lot of people, business people have coaches. So it's really, we have coaching that we're doing. Like I mentioned, I'm the money raising coach, talking about all the different methods of just things that have worked, things that haven't worked, strategies, plans, scripts, all kinds of stuff. When you get somebody on the phone, they're accredited and they found you, like, what do you say to them? And so that's one thing. And then we also have the side that's more the asset management or deal finding side, just kind of because there's really two main routes, right? Either you're a capital raiser or you're finding deals. But so those are the primary things. We also just spend time together. We do some deals together. It's just nice to be in a place where you have similar values and you're also really trying to have a collaborative environment. Because I know if the guys you mentioned, if Abel is successful and I can contribute to him, and he's already at a super high level, but if I can contribute to him, then maybe we'll do a deal together or things will open up. And so I think having these kind of groups are awesome. And then twice a year, we do an in-person event where we get together and we just go over a bunch of stuff in person, which is also really, really great as well.
Okay. And then I heard that you guys do these little mini masterminds called pods, possibly. I've heard Andy talk about doing that with Todd.
Yeah. So we have individual ones where there's accountability built in and people are connected with others and there's lots of resources. But I think when you're in a group, and whatever group it is, I mean, this could be a group like the group I'm a part of, which is amazing. Or, you know, there's other people that have groups. I know we were at a conference where they have a group as well. But just being somewhere where you're trying to get to the next level and the person next to you or the person on the call, they're also in the same place. There's accountability there. And when you say, hey, what are you going to do to build your business? Are you going to go to a meetup? You're going to go to a conference? You're going to make those phone calls, those investors, start creating that content, whatever it is, just to start doing it. And I think that I have this saying, I don't know if somebody else said similar things, I'm sure, but it's that life really has an action bias. If I just sit and think about all the things and read all the books, and yet I don't actually take the action, nothing in my life will change. But if I just start taking steps and taking action and doing different things, eventually the right door will open. And that's really when we shift from being an employee to being an entrepreneur. An employee, you'll get fired if you make too many mistakes. But as an entrepreneur, you actually have to make a lot of mistakes and then you have to quickly learn. Robert Kiyosaki talks about this in his book, Before You Quit Your Job, which is a great book. If you haven't read it, or listeners, it's called Before You Quit Your Job. He describes being an entrepreneur is like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute and trying to assemble one before you hit the ground. And in a way, that's exactly, and you laugh because you know it's true, right? It's like, that's the feeling, right? You're like, oh my gosh, how's this going to work? And so, and not that everybody listening to this has to go straight to, I'm going to be a entrepreneur, but it's the same principles. It's the ability to try and throw things on the wall, see what sticks, come back, strategize, you have a huddle, go back, do it again. And that's when you get around other people that are doing that. The word mastermind, you may know this, Ruben, but it came from the book, Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. And basically Napoleon Hill interviewed Andrew Carnegie and some of the most wealthy people in the world. And every single one of them, the common theme was they had this group of people that they could go to and talk about their business problems. And he called it a mastermind. And that's where that term comes from. So when you have all these different paid masterminds, that's the whole principle, but there's so much power in it. I would say get around other people that are really serious. There's accountability and it's amazing what could happen.
If I recall correctly from that book, Napoleon Hill used to have a mastermind in his mind where he'd go and even tap into the spirits of deceased presidents like Abraham Lincoln and other people. He'd put them into his own panel and ask him, how would you do? And you could like bring in like ascended masters like Jesus mm-hmm. Christ if you want to. And how would you do it? And ask him. And he said, like, before he would ever invest into a stock, he'd have to get unanimous approval from the entire council and before he would actually invest in it. So I thought this is a brilliant, quirky, different kind of methodology, but very successful. And I think if Napoleon Hill did it, you may want to check into
it. Yeah, I think the power of visualization and goals and just, and actually, I mean, there's something there of like, hey, if I had, I mean, it's like a cast of characters. If I had this person here in the room, what would they say to me or what would they do? I mean, you can even just learn from character qualities they had. I can actually live that out in the way this person did, just imagining they're sitting at the table. And I think it's awesome. I think that's a great tool, man. I love you sharing that.
Good stuff. All right, man, let's jump into the lightning round. My first question for you is, you mentioned 40 different countries. What's the best vacation you've ever taken?
My favorite country I've ever been to is Iceland. I was there when the volcano, it was a live volcano. It was a picture of me like a quarter mile from this volcano where it's like exploding in the background, which is amazing. It's not like crazy exploding, but just dripping lava. And then my second favorite place was Peru. I did some amazing hiking around there, around Machu Picchu and all kinds of stuff. But there's just some great places to see. So a lot of places still to go.
Favorite childhood memory?
When I was in middle school, my dad and I would go golfing. We used to go play a lot of golf on a par 3 course. And that was just some really fun memories. Love playing golf.
Can you share any real estate war stories?
This is the lightning round.
Yeah, I got to go quick.
Oh, yeah. So I had one where I had a rental house, the first rental house I had in Billings, Montana. I lived there for a couple of years. And then I moved back to Southern California. And I get a neighbor reaching out to me through Facebook Messenger saying, hey, did you still own this house? You know, it's a bad problem if a neighbor you don't even know reaches. I didn't know this guy. But he found me somehow or heard word of the mouth that this is who I was. And there was a night on a Friday night when they had a wild party and a brick went through the front window and it was just crazy. So then, I don't know, there was a bit of expense. We had to evict somebody. It was it cost some money, but definitely a learning experience.
Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
My number one hack is I don't have time to get into it, but to create affirmations. I do about 15 affirmations every morning that are tailored to me, what I feel either is true of me or I want to be true of me or is aligned with my goals or my faith. And then I read my goals every morning too. So those two things have been incredibly amazing.
Good stuff. Favorite aspect about being a podcast host?
You get to have quality conversations that with people that you would not be able to talk with normally. You wouldn't just call up some person, hey, let me ask you all this stuff. It gives a reason to like, it's kind of selfish, right? You know, when you're a host, you get to actually be the one asking all the questions. And if you ask good questions, people are listening in and they enjoy that as well.
It's so fun. How long do you want to live?
Forever.
I've had that answer before.
You know, but if I'm healthy, I'd love to live to be at least 100.
Good stuff. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I think 100%. I have a strong why, and my why is my faith, but it's really ending modern day human slavery in the world. There's 20 to 40 million human slaves. That keeps me going. And I think it comes through in everything I do. It gives me a lot of power in what I do.
That's good. What do you love about extreme Spartan racing?
Yeah, so I'm a competitive Spartan racer. I've taken a short little break. I've had a little knee issue I'm working on, but I love that it's another chance to push my goals. It's a chance to compete and be the best that I can be. And so it's about winning, but winning is not necessarily beating another person, but it's about being my best.
I did this one particular race in Playa del Carmen. It was called the Bravest Race, and it was essentially a Spartan race in the jungle with zombies chasing you, and they were trying to steal the flags. It was like kind of flag football. So you'd have to run through the zombies, kick them out of the way, and then go up obstacles and like cruise through the mud and then like slide down water slides.
It sounds like a 60s B movie, or so. It sounds like a movie from like those monster movies in the 60s or something.
Shout out to the Bravest Race. Can you tell me about a moment that impacted the trajectory of your life?
Yeah, I think when I made the decision that I was going to leave my job and I was going to do real estate full time. And I actually was okay with losing my job. Like that decision, I remember when I made it, that was a moment, and I'm really glad I made that decision.
Shout out to Shanna Amigo. This will be the last question. She wants to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
Yeah, the biggest impact I want to make, there are 20 to 40 million human slaves, as I was sharing, and I want to end it. I just think I've heard so many stories of heartbreak. 99% of human slaves, people don't realize that there's more slaves, human slaves today, and it could be sexual human slavery, it could be labor slavery. There's people that are moved across borders and are just kind of stuck. And if I could end that, I'd love to end that. So to me, that's my big why.
Thanks for entertaining us on that part of the show, man. I love the lightning round. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation, to Legacy Acquisitions, and to our sponsors, Good Egg Investments, Syndication Pro, Caitlin Patel, Jerome Myers, and PitchDecks.com, which is Richard C. Wilson's company with the family offices. Great stuff for people that are looking to expand their marketing. PitchDecks.com is a great resource for you. All right, Bronson, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
I'd love to get in touch. You go to my website, bronsonequity.com. I have two eBooks. I just wrote a recent one of how to use inflation to your advantage. So what can you do as an investor to actually take advantage of it rather than being harmed by it? So you can check that out. Some different things, and maybe some things you don't expect beyond multifamily investing. It's a whole bunch of other things as well. But love to connect with anybody. You can also shoot me an email, bronson@bronsonequity.com.
All right. Before I ask you the last question, I'm curious, share a little bit about your podcast with us.
Yeah. So my podcast is called The Mailbox Money Show. It's on YouTube and on other places that audio podcasts are, but it basically is dedicated to the busy professional who's trying to reduce taxes, grow their passive wealth, and just become financially free. And so we bring on people with all different asset classes, talking about all different types of things, taxes and growing wealth passively. What are things people can learn, mistakes, stories, all that stuff.
All right. Any parting words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or multifamily syndicator as they scale in their journey?
I think if you're getting started, which a lot of people are, which is great, you have to come to a point of decision that no matter what, you are going to make it in multifamily. You're going to make it in raising money. Until you make that decision that whatever it takes, you will not get there. You have to decide first. And once you decide, no matter how hard it is, you're still going to keep going. It gets a lot easier because you've really committed to doing something. So I'd say, friend, just go for it, commit, do it, tell somebody you did it, and make a plan.
Fantastic. This has been great. And I really appreciate you coming on the Capital Raiser Show. Season 3, guys. You believe it? 1 million downloads. This is insane, dude. So thank you once again to the Capital Raiser Nation and Bronson, man. I look forward to following your progress and seeing you at some more conferences.
Awesome, Ruben. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks.
You bet, my friend.